The question is limiting or even eliminating our reliance on others and other means a higher level of tawheed, or is it not? Yes, it is. It definitely is. If we only and only depend on Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But what does that actually mean? Okay. What that means is, even when I use this body, okay, I think the clearest example that I can use, something that you wouldn't even question or even think of, this body that we use, if we rely on this body for doing things, that's a form of shirk that has to be removed. If we rely on this, I think this body can do it for me. No. This body is God's. If I think that soul of mine can think of this, and it's the, you know, I sit down and think independently, I'm relying on my own thoughts, my own education, that's a form of shirk. If I'm relying while I'm doing that, I know that is from God, and I'm relying on God to provide it for me through whatever means He knows. I'm using what I know. He uses what He knows. I don't know what that's going to be. I have only the responsibility of doing things based on my knowledge. Okay. So look, this is what the limited understanding that I have is this. I'm going to do this, but you know what's best. You know your means. Please provide for the best, and I'm relying on you. That is relying on Him, and even the means that I use, I don't rely on them, but I am using means. These are two different things. Of course, then, the means that we use, if we rely on Allah, are going to be within what He has said to use. There is going to be a practical difference. When we rely on Allah, okay, if He has said, I provide sustenance, don't go through this means to provide your sustenance. Okay. Reliance on God can't mean that, oh, I'm relying on Him, but I'm involved with interest, I'm involved with selling wine, I'm involved with all these jobs because there's no other job that I can have. Okay. That doesn't work together. You can't rely on God and do that. Because God says, look, I have my means. I'm telling you, don't go through these ways. I'm not going to give you halal rizq through that. I will provide halal rizq from other sources. So if I see, if I think this is the only source, then no, I'm not gonna, God, you know, open the doors. I don't know any better than this. I know I can't do that, but I can't see anything else. Open doors for me. There has to be something else. I know there has to be something else. I can't rely, okay, on that. So there's a practical difference, as I said, in the means that we choose. But nevertheless, relying on Allah does not mean we don't use means. It means we don't rely on means. Reliance on means is different than using means. If that makes sense.
There's a question over here, Sharon.
Yeah.
So if you suffer from the disease, what are the practical steps to cure it?
Okay, question is about ujb. If we're suffering from ujb, what are we supposed to do to, you know, the practical steps to try to get rid of that problem? There's two ways that usually the ulama mention to get rid of spiritual diseases. This is one of our spiritual diseases. Riya is a spiritual disease, ujb is a spiritual disease, jealousy is one, and plenty of other ones. One approach that some people take, some of the ulama take, is that they give practical tips of how to get rid of that particular disease. Okay, like on jealousy, they'll probably give you a couple of du'as to recite and a couple of practical tips on, you know, how to deal with it when jealousy comes. That's one approach. This approach, I would have to search and see what the ulama have said. But there's another approach that, other than finding a lot of clues and logically making more sense, this is what I can remember, and I'll share this one with you. All of these spiritual diseases are because of the weakness that we have in faith. It doesn't matter what it is. Whether it's shirk, uj, jealousy, riya, showing off, whatever it may be, it's because we're weak in faith. Alright. If we were strong in faith, I wouldn't care, like, who is this person to like me or dislike me so that I would want to show off. Okay. If I was strong in faith, how could I consider my action even acceptable to then say, feel good about it? It's an interesting verse of the Holy Quran. We pay attention, Allah points this out, it's very interesting. You know, when Prophet Ibrahim, alayhi salam, after all the examinations that he went through when he was younger, and then when he was older, when his son got older, Ismail, they built the house of worship, the Kaaba. This house that is going to be the place of worship until the end of time. This is a great service. It's a great worship. If we do something very small, we're thinking, you know, Alhamdulillah, we're able to fast for this many days or do this, and we go about, you know, telling everybody about it. We can't keep it in. We feel so good about that little, you know, little bitty thing we did. But here we are, after all of that, building this Kaaba. The verse of the Holy Quran, quoting Prophet Ibrahim, says, "Allahumma taqabbal minna." Doesn't say taqabbal what? What to accept? Why is that? Every word of the Holy Quran has got a reason why it's there or why it's missing. Okay. It needs to have an object. Accept this action from us, but that's missing. It's not mentioned in the verse. Why? He has an interesting interpretation of that which matches Prophet Ibrahim, the Tawheed that he had. It says he considers this action so insignificant, it's not even worthy of mentioning. Okay. This is the way a true believer should feel about actions, no matter how great they are. Allahumma taqabbal minna. It's not even something worthy of mentioning. Okay. If the iman and faith is strong, there would be no reason to even feel good about that. Everything that I have, even the thought to do this action, is God-given. So what am I to be proud of? What am I to feel good about? The reason behind all of the diseases is because of the weakness in faith. Okay. So we need to strengthen that faith. How do we do that? It's by continuing, staying away from sin and doing the wajibat. This is basically it. If we continue that, that is going to raise our faith. When your faith is raised, then these problems are going to all at once. Not like you spend like 2 years trying to get rid of jealousy, 2 years with uj, 3 years with... No, it doesn't work like that. All of them start to fade away. All right, they start to fade away. So the practical tip on that is to practice these wajibat and stay away from the muharramat. In particular to uj, where it leads to other sins. Uj itself is not a sin. Uj itself is not a sin. Because of the weakness in faith, I can't really control that. The thought is going to come. A lot of times I'm going to slip and I'm going to accept that. Because another thing I need to say is that there's a difference between a thought coming into our head about something and us actually doing that. If you accept that, the thought comes, Shaitan kind of whispers, "Oh, you did this, you know, really good thing. You're a good person." That's a whisper of Shaitan. The thought comes into your head. If you feel good about that, that's when it's ujub. Alright? Well, a lot of times we're going to slip and accept that and like that action. But that's not a sin. That's not a sin. The only way to try to get rid of that is by staying away from the sins continuously, increasing our knowledge in the religion. That is going to gradually raise our faith to the extent where we wouldn't even feel like there's anything to be proud of or feel good about ourselves regarding.
Second question is, can you compare homeschool versus Islamic school?
Can I compare homeschool versus Islamic school? I can probably only compare it either based on my experience or In terms of like the Islamic perspective and how, you know, what are the pluses and minuses, but otherwise in terms of education and the other aspects, others have to comment on it, not me. In terms of the Islamic perspective, if we do have an environment, an actual Islamic school where you know, the atmosphere is such that the children are going to be able to develop themselves as Muslims better than you know, even at home, because having an environment, being with other kids, being with other youth is very important in the development of the child. If we can have an atmosphere like that, then that's great. That's better than doing homeschooling. But if those conditions aren't there, and we can provide the atmosphere in the house, and also the other needs, because we cannot, if we try to like imprison our kids in the house because of the Islamic environment we're trying to provide for them, and they're not in society, they're not communicating with anybody, just limitations upon limitations, that can go so far. That can go so far. When they break out of that, then how are they going to treat society? How are they going to do it? I know plenty of people that have made very wrong decisions after they've been freed from that prison that they were in. Okay. So if one wants to do that, then they have to make sure the child is not locked up. Okay. The child is not like they don't have access to anything. All right. They need to. If they can do that, then that will be a very good option as well. Both are doable, but for an Islamic school, I think there needs to be a lot of effort because you need to get the education right and you need to have a good Islamic environment. I have not seen too many successful Islamic schools, which is a shame, but we should start having good ones.
Yeah. Regarding that, the Ayatollah Tabatabai is stable for concerning Allahumma taqabbal minna, isn't that we should ask Allah to give us tawfiq to do the things that He likes to see? And that's the thing that we want, because He provides the means, but He should ask for tawfiq.
That's a good question. See, there's two aspects or dimensions of the actions that we perform. Or there's two times to look at it. One is before it, the other is after. Okay. Before it, requesting that Allah enables me, gives me the tawfiq to do the action, that is basically saying, God, even in doing what you want me to do, I'm needy of you. That's great. I rely on you. I can't pray right if you don't allow me. That's tawfiq. All right. Now, after the action is done, if by any means, in any way, we attribute that action to ourselves independently, we feel good about it, there's going to be a problem there. So this dua of the Prophet is after the action. Okay, he doesn't even want to like think, he really feels this is so insignificant, he doesn't even want to mention it. Right? That's how great that is. Before the action, Allah enable me to build this house. This is a great house. This will be the place of worship. So I say this is a great action, I want to do it, but once I'm done with it, I see, okay, what is there to be proud of? Like this, the intentions are what make the action. I can't really trust myself well. And everything that I did was with the mercy of God.
If you question, when Allah asked him to build that house, if you question, why?
Did he question, I don't recall the question. If you recall a particular verse, I would have to like look into it, because I don't recall any question.
He at one point, that when asked Prophet Ibrahim to build that thing here, and he asked, okay, there's nobody here. You know.
That may be found in the hadith. I would have to see that hadith. In verses of the Holy Quran, we don't have any such question. And if there is any question, it's like the other question he asked that is mentioned in the Holy Quran, which is clarification. Just asking for understanding. Not questioning in the sense like, why should I do that? What's the point in that? It's just wanting, seeking understanding, which is not wrong.
First, is that authentic from Imam Ali? And second, what does it exactly mean? Does it mean that, you know, for things of this life, you don't have to do them right away? You can delay them as long as you want, because, you know, he's telling you to treat it as if you're going to live forever? Or does it mean that you should, you know, seek success in both this life and the hereafter?
The question, sorry, sometimes I forget to repeat the questions. The question is about the hadith that has been narrated from Amir al-Mu'minin salamullah alayhi, that say salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Do things, work for this world as though you're going to live for eternity, forever. Okay. And work for the hereafter as though you're going to leave this world next second. How do you combine that? What is that trying to tell us? Especially about this world. I mean, the hereafter we can kind of understand. Do things for your hereafter as though you're going to leave the next second. That makes a whole lot of sense. Right. Because that's the fact. I don't know. I could be sitting here. Something happens. I don't know what's coming for me. And I just die right now. Okay. So we need to be prepared for that. That's understandable. But how do we work that up with the first part of it? Work for this dunya as though you're going to live forever. This advice is for someone that accepts the second part. Usually, we focus on the first part. تَعْمَلْ لِدُنْيَاكَ أَنَّكَ تَعِيشْ أَبَدًا. Okay. Work for your dunya as though you're going to live forever. We focus on this part. Okay. But this is said for someone who practices the second part. What happens is this. For those who want to be a little more religious, and they realize the importance of the hereafter, sometimes you see it's difficult, and especially working on the concept of tawheed, for those who want to practice it. Okay. Reliance on God. God is the one that is going to be providing everything for you. What are you worried about? Okay. Don't be worried about anything, because God is the one that's going to provide it. Be worried about the hereafter. There's an interesting hadith that's quoted in my... either Imam al-Baqir or Imam al-Sadiq salamullah alayhima, that he quotes Prophet Jesus saying that it's very interesting and baffling at the same time how people are worried constantly about the dunya, whereas Allah said, I guarantee sustenance in this world. And nobody's worried about the hereafter, and God has said, I won't give you a dime or even a penny unless you work for it. So, if a person, like, there's no, in for those who want to practice more tawheed and get that into them, let that penetrate the heart, they start to neglect the life of this dunya. Right? This is an advice for them. Look, there's no conflict. Understand this and practice it the right way. Planning for, to do things should be as though I'm not going to leave this world. Like, the best example is Amir al-Mu'minin salamullah. He actually knew when exactly he's going to die. Yet, he had planned out the battle with Muawiyah. He had made the announcement, he had made all the plans. He knew he's going to die before that happens. Right? When you want to plan, don't look at, even if you do know, like the imams, when you're going to die. You don't plan for that. You plan the dunya part of your life as though this is going to continue. Alright? But without neglecting the hereafter. You've got to combine these two. We've got to combine these two. Some practical examples that I would want to say. A lot of times people don't give charity out of the fear that, okay, you know, if I give this, then what am I going to do for the rest of the month? Or what am I going to do with my bills? What am I going to do with this? What am I going to do with... if there's a guest coming, what am I going to do? If this happens, what am I going to... I have enough based on what I understand, alright? But what if this happens? What if that happens? All these thoughts come to mind, and we fear we're going to lose. Okay, that's a shaitanic thought. Okay, that comes from shaitan. If I know God's going to provide what I have right now, what's there to lose? I'm not giving, like, I'm not saying, oh, you know, take my house. That's a ridiculous decision. That's not, God has not told us to do that. Take my house, I don't have anywhere to live. Take my job, you take my position, and I'm not going to work here anymore. No, don't do that. But you have a salary that is extra. You have extra money. That extra, you can even give all the extra away. Why do you have to save it? Just thought, oh, I'm going to lose out of saving. No, you don't need to do anything. God's going to provide. Okay. This is one example. So basically, this is saying, when you plan out things, when you want to do things in regards to this life, plan it out correctly. Don't keep thinking, well, I don't know if I'll be alive for the next 10 years. Who cares? Others are going to continue with it. All right? This dunya is this dunya. Let's plan this out for this dunya. All right? But not neglecting, I'm not going to make those decisions without looking at the hereafter. I'm going to make those decisions like if God has said, don't do this, I'm not going to do that. Okay, I'm going to do what He said is right to do. All right? I'll make those decisions correctly, but keeping in mind the hereafter and that I'm going to be leaving this world any second.
So what about the interpretation that things that you need to do for the hereafter, you have to do them immediately because you might die tomorrow. But things that you need to do for this life, you can delay them as long as you want because you can live for, you know, you imagine as if you're going to live forever. So you don't have to ever push yourself.
Let's see what that actually means. Okay, the interpretation, brother saying, is what about this interpretation? That when it comes to issues regarding the hereafter, you got to do them as quick as possible because you don't know when you're going to leave. And things regarding this dunya, we have the time. Okay, we don't know when we're going to leave. You know, it doesn't really matter. So you can delay that. That could have, well, that has two issues with it. First of all, what do we mean by we need to do it? Is it wajib to do it? The answer is no. And we can delay it. Does that mean, like, should that lead to laziness? No, again. Alright. No, planning the dunya as though you're going to live forever is the ulama have heard this explanation, and although, you know, leaving the dunya in certain cases, scenarios, for example, the time of salat, alright, leave what you're doing of the dunya when it's not necessary and get your salat right at the beginning of time. That's great. But again, is that necessary? No, but it's a good choice. Right. But if it's something necessary in regards to this dunya, okay, in regards to this dunya, like the battle we talk about, prayer is wajib. All right, the battle was necessary for this dunya. That's an obligation from God too. All right, but it's in regards to this dunya. It's not about like worshiping Him, remembering Him. And if we do it right, the work we do is also a worship for Allah as well. Okay, so there's a similarity there. So he says, you know, do this one first, even if it means you're going to miss your prayer at that time. So sometimes when it's necessary, I have to. I'll lose my job if I don't, you know, if I do or leave my office at this second and I want to pray. Okay. Today I won't do that. But I'll try to schedule my time such that later on I'll be able to do the prayer right on time. So if that is trying to suggest that we need to always do things related to the hereafter, like as quick as we can, and focusing on that all the time, we should look at the Sharia on that. Okay, where the Sharia says it's necessary, where it says it's recommended, where it says actually it's not recommended, go with the dunya part of your life, that's where we need to prefer. And in regards to this dunya, I mean, that shouldn't lead to laziness. Okay, say, okay, you know, whatever, we can do it later on, it's this dunya. Okay. It shouldn't lead to that. I think there's a way to actually bring them together, both interpretations to me, the same thing as well.